glad to be here with each one and enjoy the song service and especially the prayer. Appreciate the kind words on my behalf. I appreciate that. And hope I can be a blessing to you like you have by so many of you coming tonight. Appreciate that. Got a lesson for you tonight. If you looked in the outline of the week, we wanted to have a lesson about marriage, and then I wanted to have a lesson on kids because I try to do that at every Bible because I feel like it's so important that we put our faith into practice when it comes to our domestic duties at home and with our children. And our children need every head start they can get in life because life's going to try to squash them and mash them down. And so they need everything they can get, and they need good mamas and daddies to live the right kind of life in front of them. And so for years, I've tried to always incorporate a lesson on marriage and a lesson on raising children. Did that at Crossroads. I got ready to put this one together, and there was a lesson that I've given this spring, so this is going to be a little bit of a rerun for some of you. But I gave a lesson this spring, this lesson right here, and I received, I believe, some of the most, what I felt to be the most sincerest and heartfelt compliments of this lesson that I've gotten in a long time. So this lesson must have hit a nerve with somebody else like it did with me when I was studying this lesson and preparing this. So we're going to talk about avoiding the hooks in marriage. Avoiding the hooks in marriage. Some of you have seen some of this material before. It's some of the material I presented before at work. There was a few people selected to do some teaching of public relations stuff around the state, and I happened to be one of the ones that was selected, and this was some of the material that was taught to our agency. We're a federal agency, and many people don't like what we do, what we can and what we can't do. So to improve the public relations, we were taught this course. Every employee in the state had to receive this course. And since I was fortunate or unfortunate enough to be one of the instructors, I gave this material probably 12 or 14 times. Well, even a fellow as slow as I am, it begins to soak in when you give something that many times. And it began to make sense what all this was about. So this is what I'm going to present to you. This lesson tonight is about recognition and choice. The title is Avoiding Hooks in Marriage, but the basis of this lesson is recognize the attitude other people have around you, and then you have the right, you have the God-given right to make the choice as to how you will respond to those reactions from other people. So, let's get on with the lesson. What is a hook? A hook is any behavior from another person that tends to invite you to have uncomfortable feelings or unproductive responses, both verbal or physical. If someone cuts you off in traffic, you don't even know them, but you know some human being was driving that car, and you have a tendency to say, that person made me so mad. Well, there's two observations. You let yourself get mad. The other observation is they hooked you. They did something to you. You were in a state of mind in your car, in control. Everything was going fine. Someone cuts you off in traffic. They give you a reason, and you let yourself get angry, so they hooked you. They pulled you out of one state of thinking into another state of thinking. That's all a hook is. It doesn't have to be anger. It can be other things, as we'll see. A hook can invite you to feel frustrated or answer in a defensive way. If someone ever gets you to thinking defensively and talking defensively, they've got you hooked. They've got you back on your heels, so to speak. They're beginning to back you into the corner when you start to answer defensively and sort of get a little agitation in your voice. They've hooked you. A hook can invite you into an unprofitable activity. If someone invites you to go have a whoopee good time, why, it won't hurt. It's Saturday night. We need to blow off a little steam. They are inviting you into an unprofitable activity. See, a hook can be either negative in that it makes you angry, but it could simply make you unproductive. It could, as we used the term last night, it could simply distract you. Sin is a great distraction that keeps people from serving God to their full potential. What about this statement? I'm sick of fooling with you. You can't do anything right. How would that make you feel? Well, if you were a clerk in a store and someone came in and told you that, and you had never seen them before, they meant absolutely nothing to you, and you knew when they left your presence that you were never going to see them again, if they made a statement like this to you, it probably wouldn't bother you a bit. It'd just be like water off a duck's back. It'd just roll right on off. But what if that was your mom and daddy said it to you? What if you were a young child and the people you wanted to impress the most, they made this statement to you, I'm tired of fooling with you. You always mess up. It's hard to let a statement like that roll off your back, isn't it? What if it was your spouse that said that to you? What if your spouse made a derogatory statement like that, a spouse that you were trying to impress that you could take care of this spouse, and this spouse made this statement like this? Sort of hard to let those statements roll off, isn't it? Make you feel bad. It hooks you. It hooks you. So what I'm trying to show you is that some of these things we're going to talk about, they're easy choices to not get hooked. But some of them, you've got to concentrate. You've got to concentrate to not get hooked. You've got to see the bigger end than just the immediate tension of the moment. You've got to see the bigger goal of maintaining composure. Let's look at the six, and here's where this should get familiar to you. Let's look at, there was a model made of human personality, of the way people react to different situations. And in this model, human personality was broken down into six characteristics, or six qualities. Some people operate out of one of these mainly. But most of us, all of us, have the potential to operate out of all six. This is where I would like for you to concentrate, to learn to recognize these types of behaviors. I'm sure as we go through this, you'll be able to think of someone who has exhibited this behavior. A person who is in the reasoning mode is a logical person. He's a thinking person. He loves problem solving, and his mind is always on solving a problem. He's calm. But the negative side of a reasonable person is sometimes he can be almost emotionless because he is basing everything he does on the facts, and he's trying not to get emotional. A person who is nurturing, the second type of behavior, is a person who's nurturing. That's a person that's very sympathetic and very affectionate, the kind of person that wants to solve all the problems with a hug. Well, there's a lot of problems that can be solved with a hug, but not all of them can be solved with a hug. Sometimes it takes doing something. It takes making a move in your life and urging someone else to make a move in his life. This past week, it was in a doctor's office reading a magazine article. It was about an actor. And he was talking about the one person in his life that pushed him the most to become successful. And it wasn't his mom or daddy. He said, Mom and daddy always just told me how much they loved me and wanted me to be a good boy. He said, when I got into school, I had this one professor that saw something in me, and he rode me harder than anybody rode me. And we came to have the closest relationship. And he hardly ever smiled at me, hardly ever patted me on the back, but he was always pushing me. See, his mom and daddy were sort of nurturing to him. But what he needed to straighten himself out, he needed that hard discipline. He needed educational discipline. Nurturing is sympathetic and affectionate, but sometimes it can interfere if you've got to do something else to get the job done. Spontaneous. Someone who is fun-loving, carefree, self-centered. Woo! Let's have a good time. Let's party. Let's just go do something and have just some fun. Let's forget our problems. That's a spontaneous kind of a person. The problem with that is that that's unproductive behavior. I like to have a good time as much as anyone else. But at my age, I know there's more to life than a good time. The good times last just as long as the good times last. But a rock-solid foundation of faith, that'll carry you through all the storms of life. And so a person can get unproductive, and that's the bad side of being spontaneous. Adaptive. A person who's adaptive is very subject to change. moody. They can act whiny. They can act pitiful. They can shirk their responsibility. Okay, now you men and women of our congregations, how many times have you been in an adaptive mode when someone talked about something needed doing at the church? Somebody needed to be visited, some of the church work needed to be going on, and someone said, let someone else do it. I've got somewhere to go. I've got a meal to put on the table, or I've got to go eat a meal that's fixing to go on the table, or I've got to get some sleep, or I've got to get up and go to work the next day, or I've got something that let someone else do it. For better or for worse, that's your adaptive mode speaking, shirking responsibility. And then controlling. Now concentrate on this one because we're going to use this to highlight several different practices in just a moment. Controlling, a person that's concerned with rules, a person that's critical, a person that directs others, but also a person that leads, is a controller. So you see, you would really like to have a person who is a leader to be a little bit of a controller, but as Paul said, not to be lords over the flock, but examples to the flock. A person who wants to lead, but he knows that leading must be done by example and not by coercion and not by force. And then finally, a person that's defiant. And I have it at the bottom for good reason. Because when all of the other methods fail and someone gets pushed around and they get pushed out of one feeling into another, defiant. It's when you just lock down and say, I'm not doing it, you can't make me, and I dare you to try to make me do whatever it is you want me to do. You can smile at me, you can hug me, you can threaten me with withholding my allowance, you can threaten to whip me, you can even whip me. Whip me, go ahead, whip me. But you're not making me do it. Oh, you might make me do it, but you're not going to make me like it. Defiant. When people get to the end of the rope, sometimes you see they just lock down. Now, we're going to use that one in just a moment. So here we see the six parts. And we can be any one of these. Now, some of us are more in one than the other. Now, where would we like to say that we stay? Right there. That's where we want to stay. That's where we must stay. The Lord said, come, let us reason together. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The business of the gospel is put into people's heads right there. Right there. The other stuff is extraneous. In our reasoning mode is when we think with logic and shape our attitudes. Now, how does our nurturing mode work? Well, let's say you come in from work in the afternoon and you're tired and your little granddaughter comes and says, Papa, I want to ride the four-wheeler. I'm too tired. Can't do it. Oh, come on, Papa. I'm too tired. Crawls up in your lap, put their arms around your neck, get up there real close, and they say, Papa, I sure love you. And then you would say, get the keys, let's go. See, what happened? She knew. She nurtured you. Learned at an early age to get what they want. She nurtured you. She hooked you. Now, okay, is that a bad thing? No. All hooks are not bad. See, if your granddaughters want you to do something and you give in and she realizes that's mutual affection there, all hooks are not bad. I'm not trying to say they're all bad. I'm just trying to give you an example of how these things work. Spontaneous. You're ready to have a good night's rest and someone of your friends comes by and says, there's something going on down in so-and-so's house. Let's go. It's going to be a big time. We can't miss it. You don't want to be left out. And so you drag around and go. Now, that could be bad, or that could be good. How many people have gotten pulled into something on Saturday night that they couldn't get rid of and they may have lived with for the rest of their life because they got hooked into somebody else's spontaneous behavior and situation got out of control? On the other hand, it is part of your spontaneous nature that lets you show love. If that same little grandchild comes in your presence, and you just forget that you're supposed to act like a 52-year-old man with better sense, and you just start acting crazy around the grandchild, that's your spontaneous mode. Your spontaneous mode also lets you show. affection. So it's not all bad. Now, we're going to talk about some of these other bad boys on the right side in just a moment. Hooks can be real obstacles to happiness in marriage. They can be real obstacles. The current divorce rate is a sign of unhappiness. Divorce rate in the general public, I don't know, around 50% or so, but there was amazing statistics. They were talking about, there was a group that did a survey of church people. Now, this was supposed to be unbiased because they weren't trying to put a slant anywhere. They polled different religious types of Protestant religious organizations as to the divorce rate. And there was one group, this divorce rate was 48%. Now, you think of this. This was one of the larger religious groups in the country. The divorce rate in that group, in that religious organization, was 48%. One out of two marriages ended in divorce. And there was others that was in the 30% and a 20-something. The lowest was around 20%. One in five ended in a divorce. So that tells you that there's some unhappiness in marriage. Besides the ones that divorce, there are many people that are in unhappy marriages. They don't want to divorce because of the kids, because of their church situation. Maybe it's not approved of in their church, whatever the reason. But there's people that are staying in an unhappy marriage. Children need good training for a happy life. Proverbs 22 and 6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." He didn't say raise one. We raise horses and cows by keeping them fenced in and keep them protected, call the vet when they need it, and give them plenty of feed. We raise them. We're good at raising animals. Some people want to raise their children that way. They call the doctor when they need to be there. They give them fenced in so they don't get hurt, and they give them plenty to eat and money to spend. And they're raising kids. The Bible said train. Train them in the way they should go, and the best way is by example. There's a need in marriage for the right response, because marriage is the best place to practice love. We all do a good job of showing love out in public. We have the look of affection on our face. We have the warm handshake and the hug. We do a good job of our public display of love. But in marriage, behind closed doors is where you really have the best opportunity that you'll ever have in life to express true love. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7, charity suffers long and is kind. Charity envies not. Charity vaunts not itself, is not puffed up, does not behave itself unseemly, seeks not her own, is not easily provoked, thinks no evil, rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. And if you remember the Tyler's Crossroads Revival, we spent a whole lesson one night on these 15 qualities, so you know how I feel. These are so important to us. In marriage, this can be shown. It provides the most intimate situations to practice evangelism. Consider this, 1 Corinthians 7 and 16. "For what know you, O wife, whether you shall save your husband? Or how know you, O man, whether you shall save your wife? Would it offend you for me to say that perhaps in God's scheme of things, if a Christian spouse marries an unchristian spouse, that unchristian spouse is to become the personal project of the Christian spouse? The unchristian spouse becomes the project, because she should have no greater, or he or she should have no greater goal than to see the one that she loves in heaven with him or her. And how is she going to do that? Through her example. As the Bible says, through her conversation, one may win the other. And the conversation there meant way of life, method of life, manner of life. Not just what you say, but how you live. One person becoming a project. So, what if a husband and wife are not getting along very well? And they both come at each other with anger and bad words and things like that. is that likely to win? Is the unchristian spouse likely to be won over by a mad Christian spouse? By a Christian spouse who's short on patience, short and got a quick temper and a quick tongue? As we read last night, brawling, contentious person? Not likely. That kind of conversation is not likely to win anybody. In marriage, it offers a chance to make the children holy. 1 Corinthians 7 and 14. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Else were your children unclean, but now are they holy. Now look at this word sanctified. Doesn't mean that the unbelieving spouse is going to be saved by the believing spouse. The believer, that her goodness is going to automatically save him, but the believing spouse will create an environment of goodness, an environment of holiness in the household, so to speak, because usually the unbeliever will have enough respect to not come in cursing or drinking or throwing the believing spouse around. Not usually. They usually at least have enough respect. If the believing spouse is a true living believer in front of the unbelieving spouse, there'll be enough respect there that there will be a sort of a holy household out of this thing. Usually that's the way it will happen. Perhaps this is what's meant by this verse. The need to control the controlling part. We're going to concentrate on the controlling part a little bit now because it's so easy to see how this hooks all the others. And it's so easy to fall into the controlling mode of taking charge of other people. The controlling part can block real communication. This is one reason why the controlling part is so bad. 1 Peter 3 and 7, likewise you husbands, dwell with them, your wife, according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel. And as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Communication with each other and communication with God. If two people are controllers, or if one is a controller, it's easy to keep a rift going, to keep an argument going, to keep trouble going. And how likely is it for two people to want to kneel down by the bed and say a nighttime prayer and bring every day to a scriptural ending, a peaceful ending? How easy, when they've been fussing and fighting, when one of them's been trying to control the other, or both of them have been trying to control each other, or something else, how easy? It's not going to be very. When you're mad and just boiling inside, do you want to kneel down by the bed and pray with somebody? Is that conducive? Is that getting a prayer said to God? No. That's why this verse right here is so strong. The controlling part can block real communication. It can discourage the person that's controlled. This is what was said in Ephesians 6 and 4, and we're just going to use the first half of this verse because we're going to pick up the other half in just a moment. But the first half of this verse says, you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. The person being controlled can be pushed so that they become angry themselves and can get shoved away and rebel. It happens with spouses. It happens with children. This is what this verse is about. Provoke not your children to wrath. It can produce destruction. This is the way Paul described it in 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 8. Although I should boast somewhat more of our authority, which the Lord has given us for edification and not for your destruction, I should not be ashamed. Look at the key words. Paul admitted that he had authority. Holy Spirit told him what to do, what to say, the decisions to make. He had the authority. That authority, Paul is laying out something we're going to talk about Friday night when we talk about leadership. But Paul is laying out the two ways authority can go. Authority can go for good through edification, or it can go for bad through destruction. It can either be the power of influence or the power of persuasion. One of them is going to drive people away and make them harden. The other one is going to soften them up and make them want to follow you. Paul says, I could go either way with it. But he says, God gave it to me to edify. I was given authority to edify, to build up, not for your destruction. But notice, the potential was there for destruction. We need to be aware of that. Just as a side note, this lesson is special to me because of the controlling nature. We're going to talk just a moment about recognition of other people. Recognize where people come from and recognize their behavior. Now, I don't know how many of you have been around only children, but most only children that I've seen are fairly good at controlling. Because when they grew up, they didn't have anybody else to compete with. And they always got their way. And I'm an expert at that because I married one. But she did too. Because I was a controller for 14 years until Nancy came along. So for all practical purposes, I was raised the only child. So you got two only children marrying each other, and you know that was a control battle. But after 33 years, I've seen the light. So I'm telling you this from experience. And it's not either good or bad, but it's something you got to recognize. Recognize the nature of the person you're dating, who you're going to marry. Words to avoid. Words to avoid if you don't want to excite people. Now, this next little part in this lesson could be meaningless to you. Unless you happen to be sensitive to certain words and phrases that people have used to control you. See, we're not that much different from dogs. You know how you get a dog to come to you that's in a pen? It's got a chain around the lock. Rattle chain. Because the chain gets rattled whenever his owner comes out and brings the food. You rattle that chain, here it comes. He's conditioned. We're just like that. We get conditioned to certain behavior. And when we hear certain words in a certain tone of voice out of our spouse, we know that's going to be trouble. And so we begin to get defensive real quick. I'm going to describe this to you. But what I want to talk to you about are words and phrases. Words to avoid. Here's some controlling words that offend some people. You have to. You should. You ought to. You need to. What's your problem? You must. Don't you know? Now, what should have been done? You all, oh, look at the last two. You always. And you never, you know, we should never say always and never, because those two are false. Because no matter how many times a person did not take the trash out when they were supposed to, I'm sure at one time in their life they did take the trash out. And if they just did it once when they were supposed to, then you always forget to take the trash out, that becomes a falsehood. So we should not use these two words because they will get us in trouble. Now, let's go back to our little circle right here. Where does this come into play? Have you ever wondered why you go home with some people? Husband and wife, they'd seem so nice at church. Why? Sugar wouldn't melt in their mouths. But if you went home with them, it seemed like the least little thing that crossed up between them. And it was just like, whoosh. Why did that happen? Well, let's see how that conditioning might have happened. Let's say that one spouse was in the reasoning mode. They liked to stay in the reasoning mode. They wanted to be calm and collected. And the other spouse wanted to control. Wanted to tell the other, the calm spouse, what to do. And so, in an adaptive, whiny voice, they started to complain. Don't use this word, but it gets the point across. They wanted to nag a little bit. They were in their adaptive, whiny voice, and they just kept on to get what they wanted. Well, the person that's the reasoner, they just didn't pay any attention to it. And so the person who was trying to get control through the adaptive mode dropped right down here into the real controlling mode and started using the words to avoid. You should do this. You've got to do this. You come on right now. I want it in 5 minutes. No, I want it in 1 minute. So now the person who was in reasoning can't stay there any longer. Get a little agitated, but don't want to get real bad. So they drop down into the adaptive mode, and so they begin to kind of appease the other person. Well, don't get on it so hard. But then the controlling person drops on down into the defiant mode and just gets real firm. No, you're not going to get anything you want because you didn't give me what I wanted. And before you know it, the person that was in reasoning has been pulled all the way down into defiant too. So they're both defiant. They're both having a big blow up now. Well, the first time that happens, like 72 hours after they're married, the first time it happens, they go through all these steps, see? They go through all these steps because they're still feeling each other out. They really don't know what the other person's going to do, but after 72 hours, they got to find out. So, they go through all these steps. But what happens about 2 or 3 weeks later when it's happened more than once? It's happened more than once. Patience is wearing thin. Honeymoon's over. One's in reason, one's in adaptive, one says in a whining voice, will you do this for me? And it just, all those feelings just come out and they both just drop right straight to defiance. I mean, they both, one word spoken in a wrong tone of voice and they both just lock down. Now, I don't know if that happens all the time, but just think about it. What is the reason that some people can seem to get so crossed up and so mad so quick over seemingly nothing? It's because they have each conditioned themselves to go through these types of behavior, and when you wind up right there, it's just gridlock for 2 or 3 days, and then they finally get tired of not speaking to each other and make up and don't really know what they were fighting about. The only problem is it's good they made up, but a month later the exact same thing happens. Then they make up. See, nobody ever changed. No behavior was ever changed. Nobody ever recognized. Nobody tried. And so it's good to get back together, but it's like a monthly cycle. It just goes over and it keeps going and it keeps going. Now, hey, if they're both Christians and they both believe like we believe, they'll stay together and they'll tough it out. And they'll learn how to get over these things. But if one's a believer and one's not, or one is a member of some religious organization that believes that, what, 48% of our members are divorced anyway, are they going to hang around after about the third blow up? No. They're going to find somebody else. Sad to say. There's a reason behind these things. And I'm trying to show you what may be a reason behind some of these. Words to use. Good words. Why are they good words? These are good words. Will you? As in asking a question, a voice. Will you? Are you willing? What have you considered? What are the options? Which do you prefer? What are the alternatives? How can it be corrected? How can I help? Well, what do you want me to do? Here are some options. I made a mistake. I understand. No, these aren't words to make you king of the hill, but these are the words to keep peace in the family. These are the words to promote good relations with the people that you're closest to. So we go back to our reasoning mode right here. In our circle. Did you notice anything about the statements that we should use? Almost all of them are questions. And why would that be important for it to be in the form of a question? Because if you can make the defiant person think to answer a question, if you can make the controlling person stop and think to answer a question, the person who's just wild, being spontaneous, to stop and think and answer a question, you know what you've done? Think. You've made them think. You pull them up into reasoning. And when you're in reasoning is when attitudes will change. You can't bully your way into a good attitude with someone. You can't control your way into a good attitude with someone. But you can reason your way into an attitude with someone. Education changes attitudes. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Come, let us reason together, says the Lord. How to avoid the controlling hook, okay? We've got it in our marriage. I know it. It's evident. I recognize it. What do I do? Pray for everything with thanksgiving. It's therapeutic. Philippians 4:6 says, be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. What's so special about this? Because a person that's a real controller doesn't want to ask anybody for anything. The person that's a controller wants to tell other people what to give them and when to give it to them and to what degree. So, the therapy in this verse is that it makes the controller be dependent and recognize his dependence on God. In everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving for what you already have, let your request, not your commands, but your request be made known unto God. Now, the sad part of this lesson is that people that are bit by the controlling bug will not get it. If you're living with a controller, and I'm not afraid to say this, because the people that are the controllers, they won't get this point anyway. But the sad point is, if you're living with a controller, they won't recognize it. Probably. Let your requests be made known unto God. If you recognize that this is the situation you're in, pray. Follow what this verse says. Teach children to have self-esteem. There is an idea that people who try to control other people don't do it out of domination. They do it out of low self-esteem because they don't feel that they can stand and reason with someone else. So to keep control, they go into controlling mode because, hey, it's always worked. Me, I can tell you, I had no one to compete with when I was a kid. Finally got a neighbor that one boy lived half a mile up the road. We had a good time, but my childhood and all my imaginary friends did everything I wanted them to. No competition. So why did I have to learn to get along with them? I made them up. Teach children to have self-esteem. Listen, if we do not do a good job of teaching our children, we are creating in them a hook that someone else is going to take advantage of them with. If you raise your children in a way that they have a temper, you are giving someone else a ready-made way to hook them by their temper anytime they want to. Because when you let someone get under your skin and you say, they made me so mad, that's the least of your problems. Brother, you've got a hook dangling out there that they're hooking on to. And they know they make you mad and they'll hook you whenever they want to and you are at their mercy. So don't, please, please don't give your children the idea that it's okay to have a temper. Ephesians 6:4, the second half of the verse, bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. The nurture and admonition of the Lord will strengthen people, give them confidence so that they can get along with people. They'll want to stay in reasoning mode because that's the most productive of all. Realize you have a choice to respond and exercise it. We talked about recognition and choice. So far we've talked about recognition. Recognize the six parts of behavior. Just admit that they're there. You know they're there. And then respond in the right way. Now, what about choice? Ephesians 4:26 says, be you angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. Now concentrate on the first phrase. Be you angry and sin not. Kind of quick to say, isn't it? Kind of runs together. Six words. Be you angry and sin not. But look, that's two separate phrases. That means two separate things. Be you angry and sin not. There's actually a great gulf between these two. Be you angry and sin not. And what separates these two words? What is in this great gulf? Choice. Your choice. Be you angry. Be you agitated, be you irritated, but recognizing decide that you will not react that way. Make the choice not to be hooked into a bad defensive attitude and work to pull the other person into reasoning. Avoiding the hooks in marriage. Why even have a lesson like this in the first place? For the happiness of the husband. Okay, you husbands out there, you start glowing now. I'm putting in a plug for you. For the happiness of the husband, but for the happiness of the wife. Let the wife be happy. Yes. If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. If daddy ain't happy, who cares? Let the wife be happy. She deserves to be happy. The husband deserves to be happy. For the happiness of the children, don't give them an attitude that they can be hooked by somebody else by. For the happiness of the grandchildren. Now, most of us in here are of an age to realize what that means. The happiness of generations, not just our generation, not just the generation below us, but the generation below that and below that. Listen, I will probably not know what my great-grandchildren look like. And they will probably not know my name except something written on paper, or maybe once in 10 years walk out through a cemetery and see it on a tombstone. But I pray that this is not in vain, and that somehow, through somebody, something the Lord has given me that I can give back to somebody else will influence my great-great-grandchild. And whether they ever know that it was from me or not, just so some good person can have an influence on them. Open up your eyes and look outside of the little box we live in. Things we're doing has the potential to influence generations that we will never see, but we can make a ripple in their lives. And let's make it a good one. Let's make it a good one. Life is too short to spend it in a bad marriage. I firmly believe that. Life is too short to spend it in a bad marriage. But to me, the way is not out. The way is up. The Lord gave us our marriages as great, great testing grounds. Great, great proving grounds. I spoke to you the other night that we don't always get what we want, but we always get what we need if we're in Christ. If you feel like you're in a bad marriage, if you have a spouse that's hard to get along with, suck it up. You picked them, you married them. The Lord put you there to teach you, to train you, that you might have patience, that you might save your wife, that you might save your husband. That's your purpose for being on this earth, to be there. If you're in Christ, you are there for a reason. Make the most of it. Do what God gives you the power to do. Save your wife, save your husband, save your children. Be a difference. This is a lesson for the night. I certainly appreciate your attention. I hope the lesson is interesting to you. These things work. These principles, they will work. If you don't believe me, if you can remember these words to use and to avoid, if you will just try these things with people around you, they will honestly work. I've used these techniques. They don't work every time, but they will work. They work with me more times than they fail to work. Please try these techniques and keep people responding to you in the right way. If anyone's here tonight, subject to the gospel call, the invitation is through obedience to the gospel and through baptism, being added to the Lord's church, or through the prayers of the church for strengthening or restoration. As always, if we can help, please let us while we stand and sing.